Matchroom Radio with David Diamante, episode 75. Today we're in a very special location and we've got two very special guests. We're in Monte Carlo, Monaco, and I'm here with the IBF light flyweight champion of the world and his manager. I've got Sivanati, the special one, Nanchinga, and of course Colin Nathan from South Africa. Gentlemen, it's great to have you here. Thank you for joining me.
Shout out to you guys. It's really a pleasure to be here with you. Thank you so much for having us.
Absolutely. Colin, you too, brother.
David, I met you in New York. You were doing the Ogawa Fuzili fights. I think it was exactly 2 years ago. So it's just, and then of course we did the fight in Mexico, and I still sent you a text saying, thank you so much for not butchering Sivanati's name. And it's just great to be in your platform. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And I mean, that night, what a night, man. Both you guys. I mean, when you, is Hector Flores, it was Hermosillo, yeah? I mean, what a fight that was. What a night to hear and the new. That, how, it was a split decision too. How must that have felt in Mexico, nonetheless?
To be honest, you know, like, I believe to become a real champion, true world champion, you must go to the opponent's backyard and get the victory, you know? So the only thing that was playing on my mind, and it still plays vividly even now, it was all about that. I can do it, just like Nomakanjani said to me, because I believe his words, the motivation, it's what made me like make sure that I get the victory throughout those the three rounds we left.
I mean, so there's so much to talk about because I got two of you guys.
Yeah.
That night was thrilling. You know, obviously Mexican fighters have this kind of lore around them, and for good reason, you know, because it's not just the fighters, it's also the fans. You know, we just came, last week we were in Cancun, we did that Rocky Hernandez, Oshaki Foster fight. And if you haven't seen it, for the fans out there, you guys got to watch it. But round 11, many people are saying it's like the round of the year. And whether it is or it's not, it, as a, just as a fight fan, being ringside, you know, obviously Rocky's the Mexican guy. And the whole crowd was going, Rocky, Rocky. And I mean, it was dramatic. And, you know, and so it's, I guess what I'm trying to say is the culture backs the sport. You know what I mean? And they back their fighters if they fight. And everyone talks about Mexico v. Puerto Rico, but Mexico v. South Africa, there's a lot of great South African fighters. And how are you getting your sparring? What's it like training a guy like Sivanati? And you have a lot of other guys in your stable, which we'll talk about those gentlemen coming up. But where do you secure sparring and how do you do that?
Well, firstly, there's a special story between Sivanati and I. He sent me a message when he was 15 years old. A lot of people know the story, but a lot of people don't know the story, so I'll just tell you quickly. So he sent me a message in Messenger on Facebook, do I train professionals or amateurs? And I said to him, I only train professionals, but stay in touch with me because you never know what's going to happen. And then literally 8 years later, he became champion of the world. We also are very blessed in my facility that we've got fighters from all the provinces in South Africa actually coming up and doing the training camps with us. Johannesburg is high altitude, so it's a really effective training camp for the athletes. And we've just been blessed with really an abundance of talent in the lower divisions in my facility. So DJ Creel, former IBF 105-pound champion of the world. Simpiwe Konton fought for the WBC 105-pound. We had Heikki Butler as one of his sparring partners.
Cool. And that's also one of your someone you really look up to.
Yes.
Even though he just lost, didn't he?
Yeah, he just put up a great
still,
fight.
I mean, he's getting, do you think it's, I mean, he's going to be, what, 35, 36?
He's 36 in April.
Going to be 36.
Sorry, excuse me, in May.
And usually, as they say, look, the older, the higher weight divisions, the older you can be, but the younger weight divisions, usually that window is pretty small. 35, 36, that's very old for that division. You think maybe we're starting to see?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I mean, heck, he's, you know, he's not going to be in denial about it. But also, by the same token, he had an extensive amateur career. He started boxing when he was 8. He had 150 registered fights as an amateur.
Right.
Was an outstanding amateur. In fact, he became the youngest Springbok in South African history when he was in the national team at the age of 17. And there's a crazy story with that as well, that his mother and dad had to sign a waiver as a junior for him to actually step up and fight as a senior because he was just cleaning up the division.
Yeah.
But going back to your point on young fighters in the lower divisions, and you always get the exceptions, but I just think, you know, Heikki was really good on the night. I think Taraji was better, but there's no question that Father Time has started creeping in.
So another question is, because this is your countryman, because this is a guy you look up to, and he just got beat by a Tarot, would you possibly, is there a possibility you might fight him, try to avenge your countryman?
Fight who first?
The guy that just beat Butler.
Oh, for sure. It's been my dream, you know, like when you're a young kid, getting inside the gymnasium, the only thing that you have in your mind, you want to be a champion.
Yes.
First of all, you want a medal, you get the medal, you want the trophy, you get the trophy. You want to be a national champion, you get the medal also. You want to turn professional and make your professional debut. Mm. You get it and then you win. Then you know what happens. What happens next is you want to be a champion in your country. You get that opportunity, you win again.
Yes.
You become an African champion, you become the world champion. So now the only thing that you have, the only step that you have in your mind is to unify the division and become one of the best. So right. Yeah. It's always been on my bucket list to just become an undisputed world champion, the first one in my country.
Yeah. Your father got you into boxing, yes?
Yes. When I was 7 years old, my father, I grew up as a kid who just loves to be his own space,
yeah.
You know, and love to chill with older people,
okay.
You know. So my father just took me the other day to the tournament. Then I watched boxing there, and then I was interested. I didn't know what made me like want to join boxing back then, because like I was like, okay, cool, we can try it. And you know, it's crazy, because like the first time I went to the gym, I spied a guy who was mooring everybody, and I wasn't even taught how to.
Hold on 1 second. Mooring in slang in Afrikaans, it's one of our 14 official languages, means to beat someone up. So if I say to you, David, I'm going to moor you, means I'm gonna give you a hiding. But, so there you go.
So
you took to boxing.
Yes. And then the coach told me that this can change your life forever. This can change your family like lives forever. And then you can get respected. You can make something out of this. And then ever since then, I've never looked back.
So you're from an area called Reeston in Eastern Cape, yes?
Yes, but later, in the later stage, because I was born in, there's a place, certain place called Newlands. Then after that, my father and my mom, they left the area and I grew up with my grandmother. And then I followed them because my grandmother fell sick.
Oh,
so
no.
He wasn't able to take care of me anymore now. And then I had to go then and live with them by the place Dangan Village.
Okay.
Yeah, it's such an informal settlement. You know, everything is there. You get your gangsters, you get your drugs, get everything around the area. But you know what? I chose to be different. I chose to fell in love with sport and just make sure that I become positive in the area. Although other kids, they are doing all the naughtiness, you know, all the things that they haven't supposed to do, you know, growing up. But I was like, okay, cool. Continue, do your things. I don't want friends. I don't want anything. I just love the sport. And boxing has been my friend ever since then.
Do you have brothers and sisters?
I do have now. I do have. But I've been like alone like for a long time, up until I was, I think, 12 years old. And then I started to have a brother. I have a brother, Aluluto Nchinga. And then I have another brother, Lunati Nchinga. Then I have another two-year brother. I have another sister. So, yeah, I have two sisters, I mean.
They must be very proud of you.
Yeah, they always tell me that, do you know that, brother, you are our role model. Someday, we want to become just like you. It doesn't matter whether we're doing sports or whatever, but we'll continue and take charge of our careers and be the positive person, you know.
How does that feel?
It feels great, because my mom will always tell me, she reminds me every day that thank you so much for being the role model to my kids.
Does it make you just want to go harder and that much more?
That's the only thing that makes me like keep on pushing. Yes, you know, it's I want to be an inspiration, you know.
Yeah.
And I believe it starts at home, you know. If you have such company back at home, then I believe nobody can ever stop you.
I agree with that. So when did you first meet Colin?
As he said that I texted him, I wanted to join him so bad.
Tell me why. I know that this man is quite famous in SA, and
yes.
If you guys out there don't know, two-time SA Trainer of the Year, the only South African trainer to be nominated for the BWAA Trainer of the Year Award, which is great. Congratulations on
Thank
that.
You.
And also, I mean, first of all, you started as a, you know, carrying a bucket, and by age 22, you owned a gym, Hotbox, yeah?
Correct.
And that's the youngest that anyone in South Africa has ever owned
a
gym.
So basically, I was taken to a boxing gym. So I'm going to basically ask myself a question for your show. So like, where did it start? So I got a pair of boxing gloves when I was 4 years old, and I nagged my late father, and he took me to a boxing gym when I turned 7. And what you need to remember, politically in my country, we don't have a great history, and it was the height of apartheid. And I walked into this boxing gym where I saw people weren't judged on their color, they were judged on their skill.
That's right.
And I fell, even at the age of 7, I fell in love with the sport, and I never looked back. I then tagged along to the shows, and then I started tagging along with my late dad, who was a great cut man in his time, being in the corner. And then the late Marcus Temple from the Western Cape Boxing Commission used to chase me away. And then finally, he pulled my dad aside and he said, look, the boxing rules and regulations that back then didn't have an age prescribed limit for seconds. So I licensed at the age of 12 in 1990 and became the youngest cornerman in South African boxing history, which will never be repeated because they changed the act in 2001 and you had to be 18. So that's kind of my journey into the sport, and I just literally fell in love with it. Boxing's, while it's his friend, I can say it's my lover.
Mm. So going back to the story, you really wanted to train with Colin.
Yeah, because like I saw how he does things, how he has the magic.
Yeah.
How he always makes sure that his fighters, they are in good shape, they are taken care of. And because like, I remember my father told me that one day you're going to join Colin, and apparently they were chatting. Yeah. So like, he went to there's a place called Orient Theatre, whereby each and every boxer's dream back in South Africa to fight there. So like, he went there, I think he was with Congo, and Congo was fighting
Kosinati Joy.
And then my father told me, this is the guy that I want you to join, because like, he was busy, he was working back then. And then that's why I decided to just follow this guy on social media, in fact. And I'm like, I used to see him on TV, I'm like, wow, I can never join his table, how am I able to do that?
Sure.
You know? And then that's why I was like, okay, let me just give it a shot, let me just in boxing. And then he replied, and I was shocked. I showed everybody, like even my friends, everybody. It cheered me up that he replied to my text.
Yes.
And I think three years down the line, I met him. I was fighting. I was already a professional boxer by that time. I think I was doing my fourth fight. He was in Orient Theatre, and I looked at him. I was shocked because I didn't know that he's around. And then when I came by the anteroom and went straight shadow boxing, I saw him, and then I stood there and looked at him, and then I was like, okay. And then when I got inside the ring, I had to make sure I had to impress him. And then ever since then, he has always been there for me.
What were your first impressions?
Yeah, I mean, I saw his debut, and his nickname back then was V12. And
why was it V12? For the engine?
Yeah, for the big engine.
Oh, man. And do have a big engine. You've got a big engine.
So I watched the kid, and I mean, I looked, and obviously very raw at the time, good fundamentals, good balance, good timing on his shots. And I thought, I mean, the fans were going nuts for him on his debut. And I was thinking, okay, maybe this kid's, you know. And then everything came together. Like, I remembered his dad messaging me, speaking to me.
Yeah.
I was like, shit, that's the kid.
That's the kid. And then, yeah, it all came together.
And then I started matching his fights in 2018. I was part of the management team behind the scenes. And then, yeah, his dad approached me one December 2 years ago, and he sat me down and he said, look, I've taken my son as far as you can go.
Yeah, that's big.
I want to take him to the next. Oh, I was sitting in the meeting, and Sia and his dad, they were all sitting there, and I was like, I couldn't believe what I was hearing, because I was always involved in the team, but now like, they wanted me to be front guy and obviously take over his training and proper managing on a full-time capacity. And I was like, well, he has the kid, let's make him champion of the world.
It's amazing, because you know, so many times you see a lot of father sons in boxing, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work, but to have a father know that he's, first of all, he's got something special, and we're going to say something because the special one, obviously, the nickname V12 is now the special one. We're going to get to your nickname also in a second here, but to know that he has something special and to say, like, look, I've taken him as far as I can go. It's now time for the next step, you know? And because, you know, you see it in America, you've got American level, European, you've got European level, down in SA, you know, mm-hmm. South African level. But when you want to get to the world level, you need world players, you know, and that's incredible. So, so speaking of nicknames, the special one.
Okay, my father loved Jose Mourinho too much, ne? Okay. He still loves him. So there was this famous quote that I used to read like magazines. Then I would see this quote from Jose Mourinho. It's like, I'm not arrogant, but I'm the special one. Mm. So I was like, okay, cool. There's a boxer who's V12. So I don't want to be leaving a shadow of somebody.
Course. Right, right.
How about special one? And then I asked my father, how about special one now? Let's change levels. My father said, and indeed you are the special one. And because of how I push myself, my hard work, I used to spar with professional boxers when I was still an amateur, 13 years of age. And I'll impress each and everybody on the gymnasium, you know. So he said, okay, cool. You can be the special one. Let's try it. Then ever since then, I took it as my alias, as my ring name.
And it just worked.
And it worked very well.
Your ring name happens to be, or not your ring name, but your nickname happens to be tattooed on your arm. Zulu?
Zulu.
Can you show it to us, please?
Yeah, sure. So it's pronounced Nomaganjani.
Nomaganjani.
Okay, Zulu, which means no matter what and no doubt. So
this is your management company.
This is my manager. So I was going to initially, when I went independently on my own 6 years ago, I wanted to actually call it Nomaganjani Management. And I thought to myself, if ever I'm sitting on a podcast with a guy like David Diamante, how is he going to pronounce it, right? So I thought the version would be English version, no doubt.
Yeah.
So the nickname is Never a Doubt with No Doubt. So how I got the name was, I do boxing commentary for a terrestrial platform in South Africa called SABC. And I was an analyst, and the anchor man asked me a question. He said to me, how's this going to go? So because I knew a couple of Zulu slang words, I said, this is going to end on a first round knockout, Nomaganjani. And the fight ended in the first round. And every time I was introduced in studio, he'd say, and with us in studio is Colin Nomaganjani Nathan.
It's going to end in a knockout, Nomaganjani. No doubt. I love that.
Yeah.
That's such a great story, Colin. That's a really great story. Man, okay, let's talk about this fight, though, coming up. Speaking of Nomaganjani, do you feel like this is going to be a knockout? Do you feel like, I don't know who to ask first. How do you see this fight? You got a really tough fight. You have a Mexican opponent, Adrian Gatito Curiel, in front of you. To be honest, look, this fight card fans, there's four fights on the card. They're all title fights. We got the rematch with Ali and Roquera. Yeah. You've got Sissoko fighting on the card. And of course, Joe Cordina against Vasquez for the IBF Super Featherweight Championship of the World. But this fight, I do believe on the card, will be the fight of the night. It's a hell of a fight. How do you see Curiel? How do you think this fight's going down?
You know, this is boxing at the end of the day. This is a sport. It's unpredictable. You can't just underestimate your opponent.
So of course.
I worked twice as hard with my team back at home.
Yeah.
And we made sure that we'll neutralize each and everything that it brings.
Yeah.
We've sharpened our weapons. So we're ready to take him. I can't say that it's going to be a knockout, but if the knockout comes, I'll grab it with both of my hands.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah.
But then you're ready.
I'm ready. Super ready. Extremely ready.
I see it in your eyes. You look ready.
I've been pushing. I've been working so hard.
Yeah. Also, you saw Curiel had to take off his shorts to make weight.
Yes.
He made weight. I saw the scale. He made weight, but he had to take off his shorts to make weight.
Yes. That's the first thing for me, this first red flag.
Yes.
And I was like, okay, cool, because you've known the fight, you've signed the contract
right.
way back. How yes. can you come to the scale and overweight? So I was like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
He must do his thing, and then that's what, even when he pushed me, I'm a gentleman. I don't do those kind of things.
No, of course.
I believe in peace, you know, and
yes.
just get inside the ring and showcase my skills. That's it.
Yeah.
That's what I'm here for. I'm not here for wrestling or pushing one another
no.
or doing all of this. So I was like, okay, cool. The guy is still immature. So
yeah.
let me just.
I like that.
Yeah.
Very mature. And it's true. And probably where you're from, you were talking about, there's a lot of those guys doing that kind of stuff. You've seen that kind of stuff. This is boxing. this is a sport. And you're right, it is a gentleman's sport.
And
you're going to speak in a ring.
Yes.
And the ring is the ring of truth. You know, we're going to find out who's trained better. We're going to find out who the better fighter is. We're going to find that out. You know, Saturday night, there's no running, there's no hiding. Mm-hmm. That's why I always say, you know, ladies and gentlemen, this is the moment of truth and there's no turning back. I mean, this is the moment of truth.
Yeah.
It really is. When these guys walk to the ring, there's no turning back. And that's the moment of truth. You get in there and we're going to find out all the talking, all the press conference and the, you know, pushing doesn't mean anything. Once the bell rings, it's a fight.
And at the end of the day, I know that you can push me, but you won't get the title anyway.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that you win by just pushing me.
Yeah.
And the securities won't be there for you to rescue
that's
you inside
exactly
the ring.
Right.
It's going to be me and you and
no
the third
security.
Man. And the third man won't even interact.
Yeah.
It's he's going to stay far. And
I
then
think
I'm,
the third man might be a third person. I think it might be Sparkle Lee, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
But I think it might be Sparkle Lee. She's from New York. She's an old friend of mine. How do you see it going down, Collins?
Yeah, tough kid, very strong, very aggressive on the front foot, likes to switch it. We prepared accordingly. I've seen tapes, and I have no doubt that he's seen tapes of us. I believe that I've got the fighter with a better skill set, more refined skill, and I think that's going to come into play. It's very important that we fight our fight. We don't get dragged into what he wants us to do. But confidence, not overconfident. Like you said, this is boxing, but we're confident that we're going to
prevail
and obviously retain our championship. And it's a big thing for South Africa because currently we're the only credible world champion in Africa. So there's a lot of responsibility on our shoulders and the pressure is on. But when the pressure's on, as you know, like in Hermosillo, we perform.
No, you performed. You performed. That was an incredible fight, man. I loved that fight. That was great. You know, so you've got the light fly. When you move, you know there's a big fight coming up in Arizona with Sonny Edwards and Ben Rodriguez. Do you look at that weight division? I know it's a different weight division, but we're not that far away. Do you look to possibly move up to fly, or is that something you would even entertain? Do you keep your eye on that, on those divisions? What do you think of those guys? What do you think of that fight?
Like, to be honest, I'm growing, so the time up where I will have to fight to another.
You said you're growing.
Yes.
How old are you?
I'm 24.
24.
When
still
I got
growing.
The title, I was 23.
Okay.
Yes. So like, they are the one of the best boxers. I've watched them, and yeah, if the opportunity comes for me, obvious. Now, first things first, I want to defend my title.
100%.
And then 100%. I want to be the undisputed world champion in light fly.
Sure.
Then after that, we'll see what's going on. We'll sit down with Noma Kanjani, and then we'll see what comes. Yeah.
Would you see Sivanati moving up eventually?
Not right now.
But eventually.
I mean, the way he cut weight today was just beautiful.
Yeah.
He's obviously big. He's got a big frame. He can move up eventually. But obviously, we set on unifying the championships. There's never been an African to unify a championship. In fact, Tekki Buddle is the only South African to ever win a unified championship, winning the WBA and the IBF in one fight. So their goals, there's history we're chasing, but it's not Saturday night and we have to win and we have to look good.
100%, and I love that mindset. The task at hand is what's important. You also have Mtolani, you got Chilemba, and Fuzile, which we talked about. What's going on with these guys?
Okay, so Chilemba I had for two fights and then we fell out and we didn't speak for like a decade and now we call. That's just boxing, it happens. Fuzile and I, fortunately or unfortunately, had a fallout as well leading up to the Gawa fight. Which was very unpleasant, but it is what it is. We're okay now. His trainer that he defected to and I weren't on talking terms. We're okay now. Maurizio Mtolani, also crazy story, retired last year with a win, 40 years old. One of my greatest success stories as a manager.
Two-time
IBF champion of the world. Probably, potentially a Hall of Fame if you look at the guys he's beaten. And he's retired happily with some good money in his bank account.
Yeah.
He's got a farm. He's doing Uber drivers. So he's just such a gentleman. One of the, probably the greatest flyweight in African history. If you go back even to the Jake Matlala era or, you know, even Jake Tully, I have to, in my opinion, and maybe it's biased, and I mean, Jake Tully was an absolute legend, not Commonwealth champion back then, but Empire champion. Maruti has to be the greatest flyweight in African boxing history.
Let's not just talk about African boxing history, but South African boxing history. So a lot of great fighters have come from South Africa. And we talked about you looking up to Hecky a lot, Hecky Butler. But Brian Mitchell.
Absolute legend.
Like, he had the title that's being fought for this Saturday. The IBF super featherweight title.
Correct.
Thoughts on him?
Yeah, great fighter, Hall of Famer. Then this guy's like Vianney Bungu, you know, defended his championship 13, 14 times.
Right.
And Welcome Nita, you know. And then there's Zolani Patello. There's just been so many great champions. Corey Saunders, Harry Couture. Just the list is endless for world champions in South Africa. We have a rich, deep history in boxing. And no sport in South Africa has created or produced more world champions than boxing has. And that includes the Rugby World Cup.
Yeah.
You know, which we just won, you know. So here in France, well,
we're gonna stick to boxing for this
one. Yeah, for sure.
But Harry Kotzia, rest in peace, and also Corey Sanders, rest in peace. Just terrible. Got shot to death at his daughter's 21st birthday. The sniper.
Yeah, crazy story. I mean, when he knocked out Klitschko in 2003, I mean, I had a VHS running. There was no, you know, and then I had to play back because I couldn't believe what I was watching.
Won the title.
It was crazy.
But then he lost to Vitaly.
To his brother.
A year later. But still, he knocked out Vladimir.
And then also Harry Couture. I mean, he had three tilts at the WBA version of the title.
And then he won it.
And then against Michael Dodds.
Which is really rare.
Yeah.
Because usually if you have, like, what they say is if, you know, a guy that fights for the world title and doesn't get it the first time, a lot of times they're never going to get it. But this took him, you know, three shots and then he did it.
It's crazy. So his first loss was against John Tate, which was a boring affair. Mm-hmm. Then he buzzed Mike Weaver in the 8th round and then he got stopped in the 13th round.
Right.
And then he fought an unbeaten guy from Don King in Michael Dokes, who was expected to beat Couture.
Yeah.
Got dropped in the 5th, knocked out in the 10th. And then here we are. I mean, if you look at the two careers with Corey and Harry.
Yep.
The linear champion at the time was Larry Holmes. The linear champion at the time when Corey knocked out was Lennox Lewis. So both fighters, and I'm not going to get a lot of flack back home from South Africans. I battled to separate the two fighters in terms of how good they were.
Yeah.
I think they're pretty much on the same kind of level.
Wow. Amazing. Also, Cassius Beloyi held the same title, the IBF super featherweight. And he also lost it to... was it Malcolm Klassen?
Malcolm Klassen.
He lost it to a fellow guy from South Africa.
Yeah, I actually trained Malcolm for 6 fights. We had a great run together. He's retired. He actually, his last fight was against the guy I was training, Azinga Fuzili, in 2018. But Malcolm was also one of the underrated fighters in terms of talent in South African boxing. Also 2-time IBF world champion. So he was also great, but Cassius Beloyi on his day was fantastic.
Yeah. What about Dingin?
Dingin Tabilla. So
yeah,
he's probably my all-time favorite South African boxer.
Really?
So he's the only South African currently to have won 3 versions of the world title. WBO, when it was just in its infancy stages. WBA when he beat Tony Lopez. Correct. Yep. Lightweight. But then he jumps up 5 divisions, right? Which doesn't get enough respect globally.
It's super
middle. And he was out of shape, right?
Yeah.
And he fought. He wasn't regarded as the number one guy in the division, because I think that could have been Roy. I stand to be correct, maybe. But the thing is, Glenn Catley was a really strong, good super middleweight in the WBC version.
And that's the strat. That's the one he won. WBC.
Yeah. So it was give and take. Dingin was behind, drops him in the last round, and then finishes and knocks him out, right? But people don't realize what a legend that was. That's probably ultimately the greatest South African boxing result of all time, because Yazagai was a lightweight stepping up as an overweight super middleweight.
Dingin Tabilla.
And he was there as an opponent and he stops him.
It's awesome.
It's crazy.
It's really awesome. That's amazing. But I just do want to say also, because we talked about Corey Sanders, what happened to him, but Harry Kotze, Jerry Kotze, as many Americans know him as, just died of lung cancer.
Yeah, cancer. And it was very tragic because he was diagnosed and literally 2-3 weeks later he passed away. So very tragic.
Very, very sad. What about the next crop of fighters? Are there guys that you see, Sivanati, guys that you see, Colin, coming up, the next crop, the guys we should look out for?
I'm going to be biased because they're my kids. One's a kid called Caden Chuta. He's 21 years old. He's 7-0. He's 6 knockouts. He's unbeaten as an amateur, 2-time national amateur champion. He was unbeaten, 23 amateur fights. He looks like a choir boy, but he fights like a lion. And he's just got all the skill, and he's got the charisma that I believe that he could potentially go on and become a really, really good, solid world-class and world champion. And then there's one kid who is very close to my heart, Jewish kid. My son actually identified him to me. He's just made his debut, Joshua Feldman. And he went to the same Jewish day school as my son. And my son messaged me the one day, because my son stays in Cape Town with his mom and I'm in Joburg. And he said to me, "Dad, there's this kid who's in my school, he's boxing and he's really good." And he was 17 at the time.
What weight class? Just
junior middleweight. Junior middleweight, super welter. He's just made his debut. Very young, very raw.
But if
you look at Sibe had a great amateur base.
Yeah.
And he's probably not as good as when Sibe made his debut, but there are signs fundamentally that he's really got the potential to go far.
Speaking of your amateur career, it was, tell me about your amateur career.
I think...
Because it's kind of short, yeah? Good. You won a lot of accolades, but short. Why? And then you turn pro.
Okay, cool. I won a lot of games, so I was like, okay, cool. As I said, I love challenges.
So you said time to move on.
Yeah, so I felt like there's no challenge for me anymore here.
Yeah.
You know? So...
Yeah, you won. it's short, but like really accomplished.
Yeah, the thing is, when I was 17, I was just finished my matric, because I think I had to focus on school.
Yeah.
The year 2016, the whole year, I didn't box at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I finished my matric. Then 2017, I was like, my family wants me to go to varsity. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
I have this vision. Each and every day when I went to sleep, I see this thing. I see myself as a world champion. So can I please, I had to take my father and my mom and sit them down.
Yeah.
And I asked them, like, can I please turn a professional this year? If it doesn't work.
How old were you?
Sorry?
How old?
I was 17, turning 18 on the 3rd of December.
It's amazing.
Yes.
How did they feel about it?
Oh, my mother passed everything. It was like, no.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Even when I was growing.
Typical mom, always worried, right?
She didn't like it. She didn't like it. Why are you playing? Why are you not a soccer player? You know?
Yeah,
but my father was just quiet. And then my brother said to me, okay, continue. What's on your mind? And I said, I keep on seeing this dream. There's this vision that I keep on seeing. There's something that I started, but I haven't finished it. Can I please turn professional this year? Give me a gap year. If it doesn't work at all,
yes.
I'm going back to school 2018.
Right, sure, okay.
Okay, fast forward to that, I turned pro. You know, back at home, we only turn pro when you're 18. But I was born on the 12th, on the 3rd of December, which is 03-12-1998. I think the supervisor didn't see it because I was trying my luck and my dad said, go, you need to get inside.
Yeah.
Yeah, go now and just talk whatever that you to disturb him, you know. So he looked, I think, so fast, and then he didn't realize it that I'm still underage. And then he was like, okay, cool. Yeah, well, carry on. Another one. Bring your documents to me. And I was happy. And then I got my professional debut. Like, I think I struggled to get fights. And then July, 28th of July, I got my professional debut. I think it came in 2 weeks. But since I wanted this and I told my parents that I wanted it, so can you please give me a chance? I used to train as if I have a fight coming up.
Yes, of course.
So when
good mentality.
Yes. So when the date comes, I was already like fit, super fit. And then they gave me 6 rounds with a boxer that comes from the same promotional company that I got signed on. So like, okay, cool. We got inside the ring and it was, I think, 3 fights. And I was doing my pro debut.
Yeah.
And it's crazy because, like, usually when you start a pro debut back at home, you don't get to fight after like title bout. But the promoter said, no, there's this kid I've heard about. So can you please make sure that he fights after this SA title fight? And then, okay, cool. I was there and I was passionate. And then, yeah, the promoter comes. And then I get inside the ring and I was like, okay, cool. This guy doesn't know me. This is my blood, sweat and tears. I've made a promise back at home that this is what I have.
Yeah.
This thing can change our lives forever.
And you wanted it.
And
you,
I won it on third round KO.
Yeah.
And then, fast forward to there, December, I got the contract, you know, that, okay, at least we'll give you a minimum of three fights a year, four fights a year, you know. And I fought again, December, I won KO round number two. And then ever since then, the following year, 2018, they gave me five fights. And one of those fights, yeah, like, it's crazy because I told my mom that next year I want to be a champion. If I got two titles, that would be a bonus.
Yeah.
You know what, like, that's exactly what happened. I got the two titles.
Spoken into existence, but you worked hard for it.
Yes, but I used to push myself every day.
Look, guys, Colin and Sivanati, if we could do a fight down in SA, I would love it. If you got to defend, we're not overlooking anyone, and you have a tough fight on Saturday, but one day, hopefully, that happens. I think it would be absolutely amazing. Great stories, guys. I just really love knowing you guys and seeing you guys in action. Just amazing stuff. And I just want to thank you for what you do. And thank you for taking the time. Would you be okay to answer some fan questions?
Sure.
Okay, great. Let's see what the fans have written to us. Craig Reynolds asked Colin, who is the greatest South African fighter of all time in your opinion? I think you kind of answered that, but I guess it... Here it is in black and white.
Such a tough question to ask. Can you base one fight on a result with Dingaan? Probably Vianney. You know, there's different eras. Vianney, Brian.
Yeah.
Obviously our first world champion, Vic Tawil in the 50s. Now, more recently, I think Hekies and Maruti, obviously that kind of generation.
Carrying the flag.
But the greatest of all time, it's very hard to answer. Very, very hard to answer.
I think that's fair. I think it's for different eras, different weight classes, different eras, different men.
And different sports. I mean, 15-round duration, now it's 12. You know, do you compare? It's like when Tyson would have beaten Ali. Well, okay, great, but we don't know. Yeah. And you should appreciate that generation for that generation.
Yeah, and exactly. Okay, Jonathan Way asks Sivanati, Matchroom also is home to IBF World Flyweight champ Sonny Edwards. Oh, we talked about this. If he beats Bam in December, could you move up and challenge for his two belts in 2024? We talked about that. You said, well, go ahead. You said you want to defend here.
Yeah, first. Yeah,
and
first
you're growing, so you will go to flyweight.
For
and you
sure.
watch those guys.
Yes.
You watch those
a
guys.
A lot.
Yeah.
So, yeah, after I did my thing here, then I will go up.
Yeah. There's been so much action in the whole, that vicinity, fly, super fly, light fly. Is there, you know, over the last recent history, is there someone that you really look up to? Someone you've, I mean, Chocolatito, Estrada, Quadras, you know, Sarisa Katsil, Rungvisai, so many great guys in that whole neighborhood. Is there one or two of those guys that you watch and say, wow, these guys are great?
Yes, to be honest, I love Canelo.
Canelo.
I love Canelo, yeah.
Different weight class, but okay.
Yeah, I love, you know, I'm such a person whereby.
What do you love about Canelo? I love Canelo too.
I love the style. I love everything about him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love how he portrays his image. I love everything about him. Because, like, and also, he's the boxer that I followed ever since he was, I think he was fighting Amir Khan. Mm. So I've been watching his career growing up. Like, you know, my father, I used to love him also.
Yeah.
So when my father, like, watched something, I'm there. So because I can't have a remote and change it.
Yeah.
So, and then it plays in my head. No, I'm such a person who loves, like, boxing in a way of, it doesn't matter what weight class you're contesting at, but if I can learn one thing or two from you, then I'll take you as my boxer. You know, even the boxers that back then, you know, the likes of Mike Tyson, that's the kind of boxing I watch because I love to learn new things.
Of course.
Yes.
Of course. Yeah, Canelo's great. You can learn a lot from him. He's such a smart. He's a lovely guy, and what a fighter. What a fighter. Okay, Lucas Jovic asks Colin, who are your influences as a trainer? Do you look up to anyone and take bits from their style or direction?
Good question. So I'm going to answer that with just my childhood dreams. I watched Manuel Stewart, Angelo Dundee, and Teddy Atlas when I was a kid growing up. And I used to listen to them in the corner, and I started barking commands when I went to the boxing gym. As you know, when I was 10 years old, I didn't know what I was fucking saying. But literally, I looked and I dreamed of being in the position that I'm in now, right?
Yeah.
And I looked at it and I thought, you know, Colin, maybe one day that'll be you.
Yeah.
So it's just the whole combination. And it's like a lot of people still speak about the 9 minutes thing with Sivanati last year in Mexico. And I always joke with them and I say, well, thank God they weren't interested in listening to the Spanish commentary in the Spanish corner, because they probably wanted some English dialect. And I didn't do that moment for the cameras. I didn't even, like, I remember one of the producers from DAZN coming up to me the next morning because he had a tummy bug. We went to hospital and we got back like 2 o'clock in the morning and my phone was flat and I was just exhausted. And then I remember going for breakfast and one of the guys from DAZN said, hey man, well done, congratulations, great speech. And I'm like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
So those are the kind of things. Growing up as a kid, you know, you're blowing it, son. You're blowing with Sugar Ray Leonard in the 13th round with Tommy Hearns and Sugar Ray Leonard. Those are the kind of things. And I've read the books. I mean, I love reading about boxing, and I like to think that one day I'll be an historian. But
you're a student of the sport.
I loved like those kind of moments. And that for me is, so there's a good thing about being, you can be a good trainer and a good cornerman. It's hard to do both. It's really hard to do both.
Yeah.
And it's even harder when you're, it's great to be a good coach when you're winning the fight.
Yeah.
But when the chips are down, it's fucking difficult to be a good, good coach.
It's tough. You know, I remember, this is just a story but you just sparked it in me. And for the fans out there, I don't know if you guys know this, but obviously you guys all know Chris Algieri.
Sure.
And when he fought Ruslan Provodnikov and won his world title at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, so I was there ringside, and his trainer has since passed away, Tim Lane, and he's a guy that I knew from youth, so we were very close. Tim Bring to Pain Lane, former world kickboxing champion, and he got a lot of stick because when Algieri fought Pacquiao, he was getting hammered on, and HBO went into the corner and they were like, what's the plan here? And he's like, we got him right where we want him. You know, we got him right where we want him. And like right at that moment is when Pacquiao knocked him out. And people were like, yo, this guy sucks. Blah, blah, blah. He doesn't know what he's talking about. But they didn't know Tim. And Tim was a warrior, man. Tim was a fucking warrior. Since kids, I grew up with Tim. So I know Tim for a long time. And Tim did a bid when he got out. He moved to New York. He used to ride his bicycle all the way to Gleason's gym to train. And he became a world champion. And Tim's a tough, tough dude. And Tim never says die. Tim's that guy in that movie 300 when all them dudes are coming. And he's like, Sparta! Like, that's Tim. And the reason I bring up the Algieri-Provodnikov fight is because in that first round, you remember?
Yeah,
Algieri got clocked and his eye just swelled. And Tim's like, it's okay, baby. It's okay. Breathe, you know, he took the knee, he was like, be calm. And you know, like those are the great moments and like you're talking about with these moments of the great trainers. But that, to me, that was one of the great moments. And it's a shame because I know, Tim, if you're up there watching this, you know, like, you know, I knew what he was saying in that Pacquiao fight. Tim knew he was getting beat. Tim knew that, but that's his mentality. You know, we got him right where we want him, you know, and he was trying to give Chris that, you know, confidence and what he needed to get him through that moment.
Dave, I also think it's important to remember how he got to that position to fight Pacquiao. So there's levels.
Yeah.
And I always tell my fighters, and it's the truth, as soon as you have that amount of success, people are going to talk shit about you.
Yeah, for sure.
But these critics who criticize you, if you gave them a tub of Vaseline and said, go work the corner, they would have a heart attack.
Yeah.
So it's not an easy job. And that's why often, like, I've traveled around the world and I see trainers and managers when they're working the corner the night before the guy get drunk. What are you doing? You got someone's life in your hands.
Yeah.
And I take my job and my work incredibly seriously.
Yeah.
Because my fighters' lives are in my hands at that moment.
When, absolutely.
The duration of the fight.
Well, listen.
Boxing is a serious sport. Guys, don't play it.
Man, it couldn't be more serious. I always tell people, you know, everyone's playing soccer or basketball. The ball is your head in boxing. You know, your head is the ball. You know what I mean? There's no, you know, they say you can't play boxing, but like that's what the ball is, your head, you know? So it's very, very serious, and you're absolutely right. And of course, there's the ref, the doctor, the corner can also stop the fight.
You've seen so many fights over the years not get stopped because, because of ego.
Yeah, it's important to protect your fighter, of course, and to do the right thing by your fighters. Okay, final question here from G.G. Simmons. He asked Sivanati, oh, this is, we talked about this, but you didn't really answer my question, so I'm going to ask it again.
Okay, cool.
Taraji just beat Hecky Butler, your stablemate.
Yep.
Would you like to try and get revenge next? Would you like to try to get revenge on Taraji for this?
You know, yeah. I would love to fight one of the best. I want to be the Hall of Famer also.
Yes, of course. But I'm talking specifically Taraji just beat Hecky.
Yes.
Do you want to...
I do.
Go and say,
I do.
With your fist, hey,
I do.
We're not going to do this.
Yes, I want...
Okay.
I love
to moor him.
Yeah.
He wants to moor him.
Do you want to moor him?
I do. I want to moor him.
My man.
I do.
My man. I love it. Okay, the answer is yes. Okay. Look, guys, it's been so much fun, man. I always love seeing both of you. And, man, you put a smile on my face. I love how you fight. I'm really excited to call your fight tomorrow against Curiel. And, again, I think the whole card's great, but I think this could be the fight of the year. Or not the fight of the night, tomorrow night. So it's a great matchup, and we'll see. So, ladies and gentlemen, the IBF light flyweight champion of the world, Sivanati, the special one, Nanshinga, and of course, Colin Nathan, Naman Kanjani.
There you go. Thank you,
Naman Kanjani. And guys, thank you so much for joining us. Don't miss the fight tomorrow night from Monte Carlo, Monaco. We got Joe Cordina against Vasquez, and of course, Sivanati, Nanshinga against Curiel. And we'll see you guys next week from Newcastle, England. That's a wrap. Matchroom Radio with David Diamante.